Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery. We'll talk comics for the week, as well as whatever news is on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And now, on with the show.
Episode 333 of the Roguecast, recorded May 18th, 2021. Now with bonus G.I. Joe.
All right, we are here with me and Dave and Anna.
Hi.
Yep.
And we're going to talk about comics.
Yes.
And games. And also games and comics.
Whoa.
Whoa.
You know, we should throw out a quick thanks to our listener, Rob McCarthy, who's, if you're hearing this, it might be partially because he helped us figure out that the podcasts weren't properly loading.
Yeah, they were loading on our iTunes feed, but for whatever reason, they were not popping up on the store feed, which I fixed by emailing our web mistress.
Yep.
And she looked at it, she's like, it seems fine. And I looked at it, and it was fine.
Yeah, like maybe the glitch was elsewhere, but...
The glitch was in the room the whole time.
Oh.
The glitch was the friends we made along the way.
The glitch was the friends we made along the way.
Yes. Yeah, I've seen Wreck-It Ralph 2.
I still need to see Wreck-It Ralph 2.
I just
saw
recently.
I meant Wreck-It Ralph also.
Oh.
Yes, did you not see Wreck-It Ralph 2?
I haven't seen Wreck-It Ralph 2.
Oh, I saw Wreck-It Ralph 2 also.
I haven't seen Wreck-It Ralph 2 either.
This is a who's on first bit?
Yes. Kind of, yeah.
Let's workshop it some more before we proceed with it.
Yeah, it's not quite there. all right, so the big news in terms of the store is that the D&D Van Richten's Guide to Ravenloft came in.
Yeah.
Yes.
How is this? Well, go ahead. Finish
if you're looking for the alternate cover, it is already gone. They allocated us so heavily, we got about a third of what we ordered.
Yeah.
We barely covered special orders, and Anna was heartbroken to not be able to get one.
I know. I'm sad. I'm going to cry. I'm actually going to cry on the podcast. I was waiting for now for it to have the most dramatic impact.
Oh, yeah. Nice, nice. We can finally have some real drama.
Yes, finally real tears. One of those crocodile tears. Nick always cries when we break his action figures.
I would like to know the Van Richten's Guide.
Yes.
How is it different from previous Ravenloft stuff? Because they've released some other Ravenloft book, right?
So or this just one says Van Richten's on the front.
Right. Oh, you know what? this is, what do they call those? The Dreadlands?
Yeah.
What little I know is that I think they do, like, Ravenloft is one of the many Dreadlands, and I think it outlines all of the others.
So interesting, this is also their horror source book.
It's really cool.
The first chapter is character creation has lineages, dark gifts, a new bard, bard College of Spirits, Warlock the Undead is your patron.
Love that.
Some new backgrounds, horror trinkets. Then they've got chapter two is creating a Dark Lord, which is, what's his name?
Strahd.
Strahd is a Dark Lord.
Yeah.
Creating a domain. Then they've got genres of horror, just a couple pages, but body horror, cosmic horror, dark fantasy, folk horror, ghost story, gothic, other horror genres. So, like, how to do these different genres in D&D.
Cool.
Yeah.
That's cool.
And then all the domains, which there's a lot of them.
And one of the things
these are like clerical domains.
No, the domains of Ravenloft.
Yeah.
Oh, right, right.
They talk about the mists. They talk about Barovia, but then they've also got Bluetspur, which is where the god brain operates, apparently.
So
that's
I
my
know that these are.
School, you know?
I think in the same way that Ravenloft is analogous to like a gothic Transylvania type place, these all are analogous to other popular horror ideas. And I know that somebody, one of our customers, Sean Cavett, I think, told me that. There's one that is actually their spin on a Hunger Games type thing.
Yeah.
Was it Hunger Games? Yeah. Where there's like, it's a battle royale kind of situation.
Yeah.
And I think the idea is that the, like, I forget if it's the adventurers of that section of the country or whatever have like created these death traps. But yes, you are in a actual land of death traps. You are, you know, fighting for your life. And I'm sure they have a cool backstory to it. I really want to read about it.
That sounds dope. I want to play in that game.
I kind of do, too.
They've also got some Eberron stuff in here. One of the domains is called Seer or Syrie 1313, the Morning Rail. So it is a...
Oh, the haunted...
What?
It's a
the
lightning,
place where the
a lightning
super...
rail that was going through when the Mornland happened. Now
like,
it's like a ghost train.
That...
Randy, can we please play an Eberron game on the ghost train?
That's awesome.
That
ghost
sounds
train.
Incredible.
So there's a bunch of stuff. And then... the last chapters, there's horror adventures. So there's like a
little starter adventure.
40 pages on how to build a horror adventure.
Yep.
Yeah.
And then another 30 pages of horror monsters.
one of the things that I really like about this, and I know that maybe some people are like, ooh, boundaries, this is talk that's not fun to talk about, but as someone who, like, regularly runs a lot of horror stuff, one of the things that I did really appreciate about it is they do have, like, a little section where they're talking about how to differentiate between things that would make characters afraid and things that might make players uncomfortable, which I think is, like, super important when you're talking about horror.
Right.
And they specifically note, they're like, hey, maybe if you know that one of your players is deathly afraid of spiders, you should probably not throw spiders at them unless they're totally okay with that and they have given you permission it, because making your players uncomfortable is not the goal of this.
I know some DMs would probably think that's a laugh, and they should probably read this and find out that maybe not as funny as they think. But yeah, so it sounds like this is good at helping you figure out how can you can both push the boundaries of horror to make it sort of more intense or, you know, and spooky, and, like, where you should watch yourself.
Yeah.
Which is a really cool thing to do. I think that's very responsible of them, honestly.
It's something I've noticed, like, with a lot of the, like, World of Darkness books that have been coming out recently, where they do have, like, big sections where they talk about, like, you know, consent at the table and not, like, necessarily just in terms of, like, when discussing topics that one would normally like associate with consent, but like with like extreme violence or with like extremely intense subject matter, like the kinds of stuff you would see in Castlevania or whatever.
Yeah,
like those types of things that might potentially be upsetting to players, which is obviously not your goal as the DM, because if your table's not having fun,
right,
you're not having fun.
Yeah. But there are some players who could probably would probably be like, yeah, let's push a little further. We all like the kind of like, we're all horror fans and we've been doing this for ages. So it sounds like, I imagine this kind of helps orient people.
Yeah, and it just sort of like helps you approach that topic at your table.
So this reminds me, if we have time, I'm going to talk about a podcast when we get to topics. Dark Dice, the one that is going to feature Jeff Goldblum in the season 2.
Yeah, yeah. Oh.
I started listening to it. It is a sort of D&D horror adventure that they do a lot of editing on. There's music and sound effects.
Right, I heard about that.
It's really good.
I find it hard to be afraid of anything while Jeff Goldblum is involved, because he just seems like such a kind old dad figure.
He is not in the first season, so they may not be doing horror for the second season.
Okay.
Let me ask
That's probably good.
How serious is it?
Pretty serious. It is not the jokey of like Critical Role and that kind of stuff.
Really? Because it's hard for me to imagine that. But I like the idea
there's
of
there's a little bits where they make a joke or whatever, but it's definitely... It is more of a straightforward like adventure story.
Well, then I will check it out.
Yeah,
I don't want D&D to be dour, but like a lot of them are a little too quippy for me.
Yeah, yeah. By the way, do you guys know a couple things I've discovered in the credits here? Tracy and Laura Hickman wrote the original Ravenloft.
Oh, wow, the Dragonlance people.
Yeah, so they did Ravenloft in 83, and then Ravenloft 2, The House on Griffin Hill in 1986.
I hope they're making some nice residuals. I don't know how that works.
I don't think they
I don't think they are either. I think that they did work out some of their Dragonlance stuff with...
Yeah.
I was about to say TSR, with Wizards of the Coast. So that's good, at least.
Yeah.
I don't know if you guys know about this, but there are disclaimers in all the D&D books. Have you noticed this?
No.
They do sort of goofy disclaimers in every D&D book.
Okay.
Kids and I discovered them, I think, during the pandemic, and they read them all aloud. And there's... So the disclaimer on this one, by the sole act of opening this book, you acknowledge your complicity in the domain-spawning conspiracy that denied me, Aslan Rix, Wizard King of Darkon, my rightful place as both author and cover model for what could have been a much more than dreadful collection of lies and slanders. Fortunately, as I've recently found my immortality unburdened by the trivialities of rule, I have endless opportunity to pursue through agencies or through vengeance for even the pettiest affronts. Please prepare for my coming. I expect it to be quartered in the almost comfort while we personalize your malefaction of the word horror.
That sounds fun. I want to meet
now
this character.
Now I want to go find out
these
other disclaimers.
Like, I believe Xanathar has a disclaimer from Xanathar.
Of course.
There's one about Mind Flayers. It's a funny bit that they do.
Probably. My favorite thing of the stuff that we talked about that's in this is that there's a Bard College that seems to associate with spiritualism and ghosts and stuff. And that sounds cool.
Yeah.
I want to play Ghost Bard.
I don't know. I'm still hung up on the fucking Eberron Ghost Train. I'm so into that.
All right. Well, so that's our endorsement of Van Richten's Guide to Ravenloft.
D&D books these days, whenever they come out, they're always good. They don't do that many of them, so.
Yeah. This one seems like also like one that, like, even if people haven't been picking them all up, you could just dive right in.
Yeah.
If you wanted to do the spooky.
Mm-hmm.
if you wanted to do this spooky.
We are in the final month of our inventory sale. I believe we've got about a week left, a couple weeks left.
Yeah, so. It's 75% off, y'all. Mm-hmm. There's that lady who was in just earlier. She got her son, I think, a bunch of like fun summer reading stuff.
There's some good stuff on there.
Yes, there absolutely. Is. And in the off chance you get something sucky,
it's only like,
it's like you spent like $3,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
and then just a reminder that we do have our Forgotten Realms pre-release coming up in July. It's going to be our first post-COVID Magic or do after-hours pre-release.
But more importantly than that, it's going to be your first descent into poverty, I think,
first
as you get into Paper Magic.
Paper Magic I am going to play because the Forgotten Realms has dragged me back in.
You say only, but when I started playing, I was like, well, I really like Kamigawa, and I only really like it because of the aesthetics. This is probably the only one I'm going to play.
Oh, no.
Yeah, Randy, I was just like you once. Now I have hundreds of dollars in Magic cards.
It's important you let him think that it's going to happen that way.
Yeah.
So he doesn't back out or anything like that.
Right.
Yeah. It'll happen naturally. And then you can just cackle.
It's also your chance to come play Magic against me and Anna. And,
that's true.
Anna's out of practice, and I've only played Arena, so you probably will beat us both.
Yeah.
I might show up just to watch you shamed.
And on the off chance that you don't beat us both, you'll probably at least beat Randy.
Yes. That seems very likely. The sealed play is not my style.
Honestly, it's not really my strength either, so I'll probably get creamed.
And then August 14th, we're going to have Free Comic Book Day, which... still figuring out exactly how we're going to do that, but it does seem like we're moving towards everybody who are vaccinated.
Yeah.
It'll be safer. I don't know.
Yeah, hopefully.
It's hard to know, but, like, we're working on it.
We're working on it. All right, moving on to the news. Regina King, who was the lead in Watchmen, the TV show.
Yeah, the HBO miniseries.
And had her directorial debut with One Night in Miami.
Yeah, pretty good debut.
Jeez. She has signed on to direct Bitterroot,
which is dope.
Yeah,
she's adapting the comic from
Image,
and remind me what the premise of Bitterroot is.
So it's a African American family that fights the supernatural, basically. They're sort of Ghostbusters.
Oh, right.
Yeah. It sort of has like kind of BPRD vibes to it, but it's like Harlem Renaissance set.
Okay,
it's pretty neat. Yeah.
So I imagine that would be a fairly comfortable and approachable one for people who've been enjoying Lovecraft Country.
Oh yeah.
This
is the team also that did Power Man Iron Fist. It's David Walker and why am I blanking on the name of the artist? Do you remember, Anna?
Don't.
Anyway, it's Sanford Green. David Walker and Sanford Green.
Right.
Yes.
Right on.
And they're a great creative team, and their Bitterroot has been a fun comic. There's two trades.
All their character designs are super fun.
Oh, yeah.
The adventures are super fun. Yep. The characters have, like, good, distinct voices that are very entertaining. Honestly, I mean, it's one of my big recommendations, but...
So wait, she's adapting it as a movie, miniseries?
As a movie for Legendary Entertainment.
Okay. Wow, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
People can get that if you want to, like, we had Invincible before it was a show, we had Walking Dead before it was a show.
Everything cool is here first.
Is here first. You might as well go ahead and get in on the comic, fool.
Right. Read everything that we suggest.
Yes.
Buy it from us.
Please take our suggestions.
Bong Joon-ho, who is known for Oscar winner for Parasite.
Yeah. But you might also know him from, like, Snowpiercer and, like, a bunch of other stuff he's done.
I didn't realize he also did Snowpiercer.
Yeah, Snowpiercer, Okja.
Yep. He does... He has a perspective in all of his stuff. He does not do just, like, it's not just a suspense movie or a action movie. It's something with a perspective that's usually kind of progressive-minded and... but also kind of, like, he does it in these kind of, like, somewhat lurid pulp stories.
Yeah. He's the host... I know that was one of his.
Yeah. I saw it before, long before I, like, was aware of him kind of as a name.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I don't actually remember it that well. Like, I saw it, like, 15 years ago.
Yeah.
Or something like that. Like, probably close to when it came out. That's it's a sort of monster movie with this CG beastie that's, like, terrorizing, the coastline along in, I assume it's in Korea, but
I believe so, but I'm not sure.
I don't know for sure. I remember finding it fascinating, but I don't remember if I liked it.
Yeah.
I know that I liked Snowpiercer, and I know I liked Parasite a lot. So.
Well, at any rate, he is directing an animated underwater adventure movie.
Yeah, that was an interesting swerve. Not what I was like, oh, well, obviously that'll be the follow-up to Parasite.
That's your follow-up for your Oscar-winning drama about the nature of wealth and...
Cartoon Undersea Adventure.
Yeah, Cartoon Undersea Adventure.
Obviously.
Natural. Maybe all of the response that he got from people being like, oh, maybe we should keep politics out of movies. He's like, maybe I'll just go younger. I'll just start.
I will destroy you through your children. There's already like at least some animated lineage of this, like with Disney's underrated Atlantis.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And there's all kinds of, like, depending on where he goes with it, there's stuff from the ranging from scary movies like Underwater to the Abyss, which is like sort of sci-fi with some kind of scary stuff in it.
Yeah.
Underwater's scary because it can crush your head.
It can.
It's also scary because there's way too much of it.
Also, you can't breathe.
That's where Lovecraft put like about half his stuff.
Right. It's dark. There's fish.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's fishmen.
The fishmen, yeah.
There's also shrimp that can snap their claws so hard that it, like, creates, like, a small vacuum that will explode with the force of, like, a sun for a brief moment. They're called bullet shrimp, and they're fucking terrifying.
Are those in the X-Men?
No, those are real.
It's a SpongeBob thing.
Similarly, there are also, like little crabs and stuff that, like, live around, like, volcanic vents whose shells are made out of water. Water? Iron. Underwater does not fuck around.
Nice.
That's the point.
It's crazy pressure, weird monsters down there. I'll be fascinated to see what aspect of it he gloms onto.
Yeah.
And if it has, like if it's more traditional adventure, or if, as I would expect of almost all of his stuff, if he's kind of got some thoughtful social commentary on it.
I mean, I feel like surely he must, given that I think that that's, like, sort of omnipresent in everything he's done.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it would seem, unless he's like, I don't want to mess around with underwater, though. There's just there's dude, blow much, up monsters.
There's too much joy underwater for me to inject politics into it.
It's actually gonna be all about bullet shrimp.
Oh man, I would love that show.
But it's about the love lives of bullet shrimp. It's a it's a meditation on the poverty of the bullet shrimp.
Oh, this is real weird.
Yeah.
But they can still do their little
they
claw
can
clappy
still do
thing.
Little things. Yeah, that's how they get out of the bourgeoisie.
Clack, clack.
All right. We saw the teaser trailer for G.I. Joe Snake Eyes Origins, which led us to an off-mic discussion of G.I. Joe, in which we told Anna all the insane details of Snake Eyes' original comic book origins.
Honestly, none of it, like, was absorbed into my brain, so if you wanted to tell it again, I could gasp and look awe-inspired.
Well, I think
the thing is, like, the movie is not going to show all of the stuff the comic had,
right.
And the cartoon, which is the other source for kind of G.I. Joe movies, never, I think, gave him any backstory at all. He was just the quiet ninja guy.
Yeah.
Who looked cool, but, like, they gave more screen time to, like, Duke and stuff like that on the cartoon.
And the Rock's Roadblock. Oh, you're talking about...
Oh, I'm talking about the cartoon. Stuff. This, at least... in the comic, the very short version, because this is the part that's a little bit crazy. Because G.I. Joe originally came out in 1982.
Yep.
About... Like, not half, but, like, a number of the major G.I. Joe members were Vietnam veterans.
Any of the ones were combat vets who were, like they've been in the military for about a decade.
Yeah.
They were Vietnam vets. It just kind of made sense.
Right.
Yeah.
And Snake Eyes, that's where he got injured and lost both the use of his voice and had his face scarred.
He got injured in G.I. Joe training, saving Scarlet from a closing door.
Wait, what? Just like a regular closing door?
In a helicopter door.
Oh, okay.
But
I thought it was in Vietnam.
No, it was not in Vietnam. He came over from Vietnam and he could speak.
Interesting.
He just didn't. We never saw him speak. But it was Scarlet that he saved from being blasted in the face.
I'm positive. Scarlet was in Vietnam?
Hawk came to pick him up at the airport to take him home and he found out his parents were killed.
He could speak.
He had bandages on.
Are you sure about this?
I just looked at it yesterday.
All right.
Right.
Whatever you're remembering is some crazy G.I. Joe other one.
I looked up Snake Eyes helicopter accident.
All right, his helicopter accident, it was in Vietnam because I remember, like, he and, like, Tommy, a.k.a. Storm Shadow, were, like, carrying people on their shoulder trying to get to this helicopter.
So...
I vaguely do remember some sort of training exercise, so there...
I thought this was a training exercise where he is protecting Scarlet and his face gets blasted off.
All right, we're going to pause the podcast here for a moment while we look into this vital thing that has probably no bearing on the movie whatsoever.
No, we're not.
All right.
I was going to say that it's like some next level next level shit for you to be like, hi, I'm the badass female character in this all-soldier squad, but I had to be rescued from a closing door.
Yeah.
And that's why you should always hold doors open for women, I guess. Otherwise, you'll lose your face and voice now, in a helicopter
accident.
It's
like, I've got the panel pulled up where it's like, it's a helicopter thing, and he's like, it's like, blows the door, but I don't know. I thought Scarlet was there. In fact, I thought I see Scarlet there, but I don't know, I thought I was in during a G.I. Joe training exercise early on.
It could be, because, like, the G.I. Joe, the Snake Eyes origin story, when they originally showed it, had a lot of flashbacks in it.
Yeah.
And, the sequence I'm remembering is one where they're waiting for, like, a helicopter to get them out of a combat zone, and a lot of bad stuff goes down. But I guess the larger point was Snake Eyes gets injured either in or around, his combat stuff. Comes back to find that his family that was coming to pick him up actually died in a car crash on the way, and that he is left alone. And he goes to train then with his buddy from Vietnam, who was Tommy
Arashikage
from was the Arashikage Ninja Clan, and he trained as a ninja and all that stuff, and would later rejoin the military with his newfound ninja training, I guess.
Yep.
As like their super badass commando guy. Now, we don't. They did touch on this in the previous G.I. Joe movie.
Yeah, sure.
They had, who was it, the RZA as the blind master.
Which, oh my god, yeah. Did they really cast the RZA?
That was great. Reasonable
That's
approximation
so
of kind of how he looked in the comics.
Yeah.
I don't know if this has any continuity with those, if they're kind of doing their own thing, but the guy playing him is the dude from Crazy Rich Asians.
Yeah, Henry Golding.
Yeah.
And, I think we do. They're going to at least show. It looks like we're going to get the Arashikage Ninja Clan, because I saw also their symbol, the tattoo Snake Eyes has,
yeah.
Which is a what do you call the little
I Ching?
Yeah, I think that might be the symbology on it. And he's going to train with them. We don't know if like they're going to like throw in any war stuff. If they do, it obviously won't be Vietnam. It'll be some generic Middle Eastern.
It looks like in Japan. It looks like they may be doing his training stuff. But there's also like there's a sequence where he's jumping around on cars with other ninjas.
Yep.
I know this is a weird comparison to make.
Okay.
But it felt a little Fast and Furious to me.
I was going to say, are you about to say Hobbs and Shaw?
It not quite that crazy, but it felt
G.I. Joe is more restrained than the latest Fast and Furious.
But here's the thing. You know, one of the great things, one of the reasons the G.I. Joe sequel worked is because they brought in The Rock.
Yep.
Just like they did in Fast and Furious.
Right, as of number 5.
So I believe there's a link here. I believe you can say that this is not going to be the G.I. Joe Snake Eyes that I want. But watching this teaser, which, again, my expectations were lowered because all you guys were like, oh, this teaser's really bad.
Yep.
I was like, no, this seems fine. It's got hip-hop music. It's got ninjas jumping around on cars. I could be in for this.
I think the thing for me is when I see G.I. Joe, I want all the kind of trappings of it.
Yeah.
And I've sort of seen ninja-y or at least martial artist-y type movies like that. And it didn't have enough. Like, I wanted to be fighting like Cobra, or I want some Dreadnoks to show up.
But this is
some
all kind pre-Cobra. Of craziness. It's all...
At that point, it's too boring to show. You skip that stuff.
Yeah.
Snake Eyes is coolest when he's fighting Cobra.
What if he's fighting other ninjas?
Boring. I've seen ninjas fight ninjas.
What are those, like, what are the red ninjas, though?
Well, that would be pretty great. a ninja that's red, wow.
So what if they go the route that they did in the comics where it's like Zartan is the bad guy?
That would be cool. Zartan, shape-changing, or like... Zartan, I guess he has like an illusory powers.
Zartan is the man, spoilers
he
for...
He has illusory powers?
What, 40-year-old comic?
Did you say illusory?
Yeah, I swear that's
illusory.
What
illusory.
Okay.
Illusions, Michael.
There was, for the longest time, the guy...
My illusions.
When Snake Eyes was training, was it the uncle of Storm Shadow?
Yeah.
Who ran the academy was killed. Oh, and Storm Shadow took the hit for it.
Yeah.
They all thought because he was this master archer and he was because his uncle was killed by archery that it was him trying to move up forward in succession.
But it was Zartan.
It was Zartan.
Spoilers.
What did they get out of it? Like, what did Cobra or Zartan or whatever get out of it?
I think
they just think
like
it was
him.
Funny.
I just
It's just a prank, bro.
Hey, watch this. I got a prank softmaster with this arrow.
You mad, bro? Lol. I assume what I'm going to say, even though I don't know if they ever like outright said it, is that Cobra was did not like this, the rise of power in the Arashikage Ninja Clan and needed to create dissent and stop them from potentially interfering with them.
I think it was like a personal thing for Zartan, as I remember. But
it might have been because he may have been training with them. But yeah, he actually used all his cool sound equipment and stuff like that. He had like a super bow with all this technical.
Because so he could act, so he could shoot just like the.
He could shoot through walls like Storm Shadow could without that.
Yeah.
You know, normally I find myself like really easily able to interject snarky and or sarcastic commentary into just about anything.
Yep.
But I know so fucking little about G.I. Joe, and y'all are so excited about it.
Well, that's because Dave and I, that's where we came.
Yeah.
Dave and Nick and I, that's where we came in on comics. So, like, also, it is foundational.
The weird thing is that G.I. Joe, as at its best, it was the best thing that Hama's written.
Yep.
And at its best, it was as good as I think as anything else Marvel was putting out at the time. It did not hit the peaks, I'm going to say, necessarily, of like Roger Stern's Spider-Man or Frank Miller's Daredevil. But it can like go toe-to-toe, I think, with the average issue of like Avengers and stuff during a really pretty strong era.
I agree. Also, if you were to Inception one of us, when you get to the deep, it would not be the snowy fortress. It would be like the pit. You'd be in G.I. Joe mode. You would have to go in and pretend to be Zartan.
Pit, by the way, is their secret headquarters under the Chaplain's Assistant School in Fort Wadsworth.
That's correct. The Chaplains do not know that the G.I. Joe team is underneath it.
Yes.
Thank you for saying that, because I am just sort of sitting here glassy-eyed looking off into the distance, and I'm like, the fuck is Zartan? The fuck is the pit? Like, there's like a dial tone.
I will show you
brain.
Some images later, because Zartan is, like a lot of Cobra dudes, looks cool.
Zartan is your aesthetic. That's Zartan and the Dreadnoks, that's your aesthetic.
All you need to know is, he leads.
Are they half naked barbarian people?
Yes.
Oh, damn.
They are Rogue Warrior rejects, half of them from like England or Australia.
Australia,
All right.
Led
I'm
by
sold.
A guy who's like this cool hooded dude with weird kiss looking makeup on his face.
Who can change
and
his
like
face.
A half, like a armored crop top.
Yeah, armored crop top.
You're
gonna like Zartan.
and he's badass.
We're gonna convert Anna to the G.I. Joe stuff just for Zartan and the Dreadnoks.
Also, let me just say,
oh my god, he's so cool.
Also, when the Dreadnoks go and
Anna is looking at her phone, she did not just suddenly have an epiphany.
No,
Zartan is here in the room.
He manifested.
Zartan will be sitting in for the rest of the podcast.
Oi,
he's incredibly.
That is Zartan.
Yep.
This is. What is this weird fucking head that he has in this box that comes with this action figure?
That's his mask.
Oh, that's his mask.
In the comics, or like later on, they would kind of make out that he actually has either like some sort of technology or some bizarre power where he actually just illusory makes himself look like people. But as kind of originally conceived, it was masks,
Mission Impossible masks. Yeah.
You know what? I'm sold.
Yeah, I can't wait to show you the issue where the Dreadnoks go to the G.I. Joe base and start tearing up jets.
They wreck F-16s with chainsaws.
What?
Yep.
Oh my god, all this time I thought G.I. Joe was for dorks.
I do want to say that one of the coolest legit issues of G.I. Joe was one where... Ripcord, their kind of halo jumper guy, goes to try and rescue his girlfriend on Cobra Island. He goes in alone. He goes against orders.
Yeah.
And it's him on this muddy, rainy, shoreline trying to kind of, storm it. And it's just him with his, sniper rifle versus Zartan, at the other end of the shore with his super highly, super sensitive bow.
Yep.
And, there's other subplots going on, but they keep cutting back. And it's just this amazing, sniper battle between the two of them.
Dave, you left out the most important part.
Are you about to say Bongo the Balloon Bear?
I am about to say Bongo the Balloon Bear. We don't talk about Bongo the Balloon Bear enough in this podcast.
His girlfriend works for a circus in a bear costume, and she is Bongo the Balloon Bear.
Wait,
the circus
what the fuck
circus. ARBCO is an anagram for Cobra. It's a front they use to travel around.
Did nobody ever think, ARBCO? That's a weird word. That sounds an anagram for Cobra.
In 1985, people didn't think about these.
By the way, I'm just saying.
They were all riding high on cheery Reagan propaganda.
His girlfriend wears a bear suit.
Yes.
Yes.
She's the daughter.
Like a mascot type thing.
Yeah, like
dressed like a fucking mascot
for her job.
For the circus.
Was it a circus or a mall thing?
It might have been a mall thing.
She has balloons. She's a bear. She just balloons to children.
That's right.
Yeah.
Wait, what kind of circus is this?
This isn't a circus. That's a different thing.
Yeah, you know what? I was blurring things because, yeah, they do. That is like a thing that Tomax and Zaymot are part of. They are both Crimson Guardsmen, right. And the Crimson Guard is like one of the head of the Crimson Guard is her dad.
Yes, that's true. And Tomax and Zaymot are twins who can feel each other's pain.
Every word you guys say makes this more confusing.
I know, I'm just adding stuff.
Keep saying
as,
names.
I'm going to have to move the podcast along before everybody tunes out. But. Randy and I just geeked out.
Yeah. So we who would have thought that the guys whose podcast sign-off is Yo Joe know a lot about G.I. Joe?
It's fair. About the first 60 or 70 issues is just the best
time. It's great.
Just the best.
I'm so confused.
Finally.
just keep it on Zartan. Just focus on Zartan.
John Boyega,
yep.
Who is coming back to do Attack the Block 2, one of his early things, a British sci-fi... Gangs versus aliens thing.
Yeah.
They're like British hoodlums versus aliens, yeah. Yes.
And like I never all the saw monsters, it, but I heard it's you good. Never saw it?
No.
Oh my god, Dave, what?
I don't like British hoodlums.
Okay, but like the monster designs are like incredible and they're all practical effects and it's like beautiful.
That, but cool. I'll watch it one of these days.
It's pretty cool. Honestly, I'm like legitimately shocked. You're the horror guy.
It's not horror, it's more action. It's,
I mean, but like there are horror monsters in like some scary situations.
That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I have it on good authority.
Anyway, it's pretty cool that he's coming back to do season the second.
It is really cool. I feel let down.
Oh no, it means Dave has a thing to discover, just as you have the Dreadnoks to discover.
I mean, I guess that's fair. Is it Dreadnoks?
Dreadnoks.
Yeah.
How do you spell that?
N-O-K-S.
Yep.
Dreadnoks.
Yeah.
They're a biker gang. They like grape soda and chocolate donuts.
That's correct.
That's really relatable.
Yeah.
And they wear armored crop tops?
Some of them do.
They absolutely do. One of them has a leopard print one, Ripper.
Yeah, one of them has a buzz cut.
That guy's really relatable.
Yeah, there's a guy who's like an astrophysicist too, right?
And well, that guy's not relatable.
The backstory on him is that they were he was like a Cambridge dropout or whatever.
Yeah.
The Buzzer, the chainsaw guy.
Well, now he's relatable again.
Yeah. But mostly they go around live to trash stuff.
Yeah, now he wears a sleeveless vest and he carries a chainsaw with him.
Man, I could do that cosplay.
I know.
I'm going to bring a chainsaw to work, right?
I totally could. Incidentally, this was one of the cool things about Cobra as a terrorist organization.
Yeah.
They weren't just all guys running around with plastic explosives and machine guns and stuff like that. Sometimes it was biker gangs, too.
Sometimes it was a hypnotist with a falcon. No, that's two different guys.
And sometimes it was a bear who gives balloons to children?
No, she's not Cobra.
She didn't know her dad was a Cobra heavy.
Right. Yeah, she was just a girlfriend.
Yeah, but her dad was Cobra.
Her dad was Cobra. But
he
was not the Cobra hypnotist.
By the way,
the man who used to come to work dressed in a bare-chested outfit with a cape.
Look, I'm just saying, I do think that maybe there is possibly a Rogues Cast spinoff podcast where you guys just pick issues of G.I. Joe and make me read them and then try to explain why they make sense.
Actually, we may have just found our podcast, Anna. You and I've got all of it in trade. We should go issue by issue through the 150 issues of G.I. Joe.
Oh my god, there's 150 issues. I'm going to throw up.
And we could go through one issue by issue, and by the end, you would be in love with G.I. Joe.
All we promised originally is that we go through the origin of Snake Eyes, which is takes you up to the first 25 issues.
Yeah, that's true.
Okay, well, if you do that, if you bring that, I will read that.
Okay.
I will read the G.I. Joe.
All right.
You were here for it, folks.
All right. The birth of our spinoff podcast.
I'm pretty sure they tuned out the moment that we went back
no
to
one's
talking
listening
about
this.
It.
Yeah.
If you listen past the G.I. Joe point, make sure and email us this week and say, hey, I heard the rest of the podcast.
Randy, just edit all of that out in post-production.
The podcast was only 20 minutes this week because we lost 30 minutes talking about G.I. Joe. All right. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, there will be 100% less, 90% less G.I. Joe, and 100% more comics content. We're talking comics the week of May 19th, 2021, and it's worth noting that we just spared you guys another 15 minutes of G.I. Joe talk.
They didn't stop.
No, we
Please
did not
send
stop.
Help.
We have semi-seriously considered doing a podcast in which we talk about G.I. Joe with Anna.
There is a possibility there will be a spinoff Roguecast where we talk about G.I. Joe.
Yes. All right, but let's talk about the cool stuff that came out this week.
Yeah.
Do we hit number ones first?
Yeah. So Shang-Chi number one. This is Jimin Wang and... D.K. Ruan, maybe? I don't know the artist. But this is... he had done a reinvention of Shang-Chi for a miniseries where Shang-Chi was revealed to have His father's organization was the Five Weapon Society. He was like the Fist. His sister is the Dagger. There's a few others. And at the conclusion of that miniseries, basically, he became the head of this new society. And so we joined him in progress in this new series where he is the head of a criminal organization, and he's trying to shut down all their bad works.
That sounds tricky. So I haven't read this yet, but I feel like being a good person, like if a good person was handed over Al-Qaeda, yep. I don't know what they do with it.
Yep. Next. Well, and then things are complicated because his sister is a crazy person who is very aggressive.
I love her.
He's on a first date, and she keeps messaging her, and he's like, she's like, this is boring. This date is boring. Can I just stab this guy and get him to talk? And he's like, no. And then his date.
I can see
off.
Why this appeals to you, Anna.
It's a lot of fun. And then Spider-Man gets involved, and he has to sort of hide from Spider-Man. He's like, I don't want to tell Spider-Man that I'm head of this criminal organization, and my sister doesn't see why I don't want to tell him this. And it's a lot of fun watching him interact with Spider-Man and take down this sort of evil weapons dealer.
This sounds like starting to get hyped for the movie or something like this. Yeah. Obviously, yep. A good thing to check out.
Actually, it's like really cute.
It's
and
super
fun.
I
did not think I would like it, but I'm glad that you made me read it right before the podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah, Gene Luen Yang can really write Spider-Man.
Yeah. It's really fun. I enjoyed it quite a bit. Yeah. Then there is Fantastic Four Life Story number one. This one of our favorite projects the last few years was Spider-Man Life Story by Chip Zdarsky and Mark Bagley.
Yeah, which for those who didn't read it, the real quick version is a kind of imagined in like a 6 or 7 issue miniseries, each one moved forward a decade and told the entirety of Peter's life in sort of real time, in so far as like he aged, when he was created, the character was created in the 60s, so it began in the 60s, basically he becomes Spider-Man in like Vietnam era.
Yeah.
And by the time he meets Venom, he was like in his 40s and maybe even has a kid. So it all rolled out a little differently than the comics, but it also touched on all the familiar eras, and it ended up telling a satisfying story of what hypothetically could be Peter Parker's life, his whole life.
Yep.
And so I think it went over so well that Marvel has decided to try some more life story miniseries. This is a different creator.
Yeah, this is Mark Russell, who has done a variety of things, including the Flintstones over at DC,
yep.
The Second Coming, which is the Ahoy book about Jesus teaming up with Superman, basically.
Yep. And by the way,
also actually just came off of like 30 issues of Red Sonja.
Yeah.
Which is like my favorite thing he's done.
His Flintstones thing was like super highly regarded, some very clever modern satire and weirdly edgy at times stuff.
Yeah, his stuff tends to have a bit of a political bent.
Yeah.
So I was curious to see what he'd do here, and this is a really good Fantastic Four issue.
Yeah.
It's basically a reinvention of their origin in 1961.
It's got Kennedy.
It's got Kennedy. There's some clever reasoning as to why they have fours in their uniform. Did you catch that?
Yeah, I did.
I thought that was really clever. Like, why they had uniforms. Why they had blue uniforms sitting around with the four on them, which I thought was really clever.
Am I correct? This is its own sort of standalone universe. It doesn't necessarily tie in with the Spider-Man life story.
It does
story,
not
right?
seem
it
to be
not.
Tying in with the Spider-Man life story. It's its own thing.
Though, if they do have Peter be a part of it, it will be interesting, because I know Reed had a pretty big part in Peter's life.
They'd kind of have to make Reed a bad guy, because wasn't he kind of a bad guy? Or was he just kind of a jerk?
Anna, noted Fantastic Four hater, but particularly noted Reed Richards hater, thinks that Reed Richards is always a bad guy.
That's fair.
And Dave thinks that Anna has read like one Fantastic Four comic.
That's because
now she's read two.
They are fantastic.
I'm
going to,
at some point, actually, I don't think that the stuff that I like with them would necessarily grab you, but at some point I'll put a few interesting issues in front of you.
I mean, actually, unironically, though, I did really enjoy this. Like, I was dead ass
shocked.
I thought
this was really good. I was a little worried because Chip Zdarsky is a certain talent, and I'm much to love Mark Russell. I wasn't sure he could live up to it.
Yeah.
And I think this is a good first issue. I'll be curious to see where they go with more of it. And I think, at least for our store, Life Story as a brand is pretty successful. Like, people have been excited for this.
It also helps that we were really excited for it, so we've buy this. But
everybody who buys it is like, oh,
they
that was
all
great.
Also love it, yeah.
Yeah. Then DC has a couple books, first issues this week. They have Wonder Girl number one, which brings Yara Flor from the Future State into the main...
She's the Brazilian, or like the Amazon rainforest Wonder Woman.
She's really cool, and I like her a lot.
Yep, and is she in Brazil in this one? I feel like she is.
She is.
I heard that she, like, I didn't know this is a backstory, but, like, she may be an American, like almost like from Boise, Idaho or something like that. And, like, I think she has some calling, some past that draws her maybe back to an ancestral land. I don't know if that happens in there, but it's what I was reading.
I don't remember. Like I was sprinting through it.
She says that she was born there. She's on a plane from the U.S. to Brazil, and she says she was born there, and her aunt raised after they left, and she never talks about it. So
okay. So she's got, like, family ties, yeah. And it becomes a thing. I think that's kind of cool. I like the idea of people sort of finding out these cool and mysterious things about where their family came from.
They also jump around and show Themyscira and show Nubia being, and she's the queen.
Okay.
I guess maybe Hippolyta has left for man's world to go be in Justice League or something.
Sure.
Nubia seems to be the queen.
Huh. Yeah, I don't recall.
What's that?
I said I don't recall what's going on with that.
They show Mount Olympus and what Hera and Zeus think of all this. And then they show Bana Migdal, which is the sort of more
it's a Middle Eastern stripe of they were like a splinter faction of the Amazons that would go way back to the Perez era.
They got Artemis and somebody else in there. I don't remember her name. Queen Faruka? I don't know her.
Fascinating.
But there's also nice art from
Joel Jones.
So Joel Jones writes and draws this, and yeah, the art is really, really pretty.
Yeah.
It's if you're looking for a sort of a different kind of Wonder Woman book, there's some magic and mythology and that kind of stuff in there.
Yeah.
Maybe give it a look.
Yeah, it's got some pretty gorgeous panel layouts, lots of fun Joel Jonesy style stuff.
And I think people who like were reading Future State and like have already seen some of the character in that might be intrigued to check back in.
Then there's a Legends of the Dark Knight, which is the anthology series that was came around the 90s.
Yeah, that was like they brought it back with a maybe slightly different mission statement. I think we're not 100% sure, but it used to be. It would be like 5-issue arcs for a good while of the book.
And then they changed it. There'd be one shots and 2-issue arcs and that kind of thing.
But sort of notable, basically notable creators kind of got to do their spin. And this one is sort of notable because it's the artist of the boys.
Yep.
Derek Robertson.
Derek Robertson writing and drawing. And he is bringing in Joker and Penguin and Mr. Fear? Mr. Freeze.
Oh.
Mr. Freeze.
He is Mr. Freeze.
There's nothing involving the Teen Titans in there, is there?
There is not.
Okay, good.
Why?
Because never mind. You said the artist from The Boys, and I was like, I just don't want.
Yeah, you don't want. That.
I don't want anything. I don't want anything from The Boys in my.
I have
DC
realized
continuity.
Where you were. What your worry is.
But these are. this is really nice art by Derek Robertson. I really like the way he draws his Joker. And if you want sort of classic villain stuff,
let me see how he draws his Joker.
There's a bit here where he's like flying a helicopter. That's a good bit.
That is good, because he does generally tend to draw most people.
Oh, yeah, that is like the Jim Aparo version.
It's an Aparo-esque. Actually, I think there's more than a little Aparo influence on his version.
Oh, that's cool. Jim Aparo, I felt like, because Neil Adams gets so much love, I think sometimes Jim Aparo, who sometimes I actually like a little bit better overall, I feel like he gets crowded out as like the best 70s Batman artist.
I want someone who can who brings in Breyfogle influence. I think Breyfogle is not respected enough for
so I think idiosyncratic that he's like one of those ones that few people try to imitate.
It's like trying to do a Sienkiewicz.
Yeah, that's true. There's that'd be a fun topic for a podcast sometime. The most inimitable comic artists.
Yep.
Keep it in mind.
Then we have Dark Horse's Rangers of the Divide. By Megan Huang, and it is...
it's like a sci-fi fantasy that... The vibe seemed to me the kind of stuff that was both Last Airbender and, like, the same team also made, like, Voltron.
Yeah.
And, like, maybe this would land somewhere in between, but I haven't read it yet.
Similar to it. It's very fantasy. There's monsters, there's animals, there's magic.
The art is, like, delightfully cartoony in there.
It
pretty
is.
Colors.
Yeah.
It's very, very fun.
Marvel has another Immortal Hulk one-shot. This is... it's got two stories. One is sort of a Hulk of 9500 BC.
Interesting.
It's like someone who goes through the green door, basically. It's like a monster Hulk.
But I do have a question.
Yep.
How is Hulk going to do the coolest Hulk trick, which is to say, make brass knuckles out of a car if there's no cars?
Cart. He uses carts.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm sold. Those aren't really brass knuckles.
Did you say the green door?
The green door.
That was like one of their seminal porn movies.
Well, they're using it here as that makes him immortal.
Wait, I'm sorry. What?
Door.
Behind the Green Door is a famous porn movie.
Yep.
Just like Deep Throat was.
Yep. I did not know that.
Yeah.
But...
Like one of those. I think in the 70s when there was a notion, at least some notion of like sort of having plot and maybe vague artistic legitimacy to porn. That was one of them. That's all I know. I watched a documentary on HBO once.
With a name like Behind the Green Door, it sounds like it could be a Boom comic.
It really does. Maybe they should pick that up.
And then there's a backup story where Marvel Scarecrow fights the Hulk in a movie theater.
Those stories actually both sound intriguing.
Yeah,
both
they do.
Because I like Caveman and because I like Scarecrow.
And nice art throughout.
Cool. Yeah.
And then worth noting that Sunstone Volume 7 comes out this week, speaking of porn.
Although, Randy, you know, earlier you described it as very much being like a Terry Moore kind of soap operas, you know, like Strangers in Paradise, but with more naughtiness.
It is definitely more porn, more straight up porn. There's a lot of nudity.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's a lot of nudity in Sunstone.
Some BDSM stuff. But also, the relationship stuff is really good.
I think it might be, like, the best slice of life comic.
Yeah, it's really good.
So,
if you like Strangers in Paradise, but you were like, why was there not enough lesbian stuff?
Yeah.
You might, or why was there not enough sex and actual nudity? Sunstone's going to be your book.
Well, if you're me, or possibly Greg Rucka, that why are there not enough lesbian stuff in this book?
Omnipresent question.
Probably, yeah.
there cannot be enough lesbian stuff for Greg Rucka.
Yeah. Yeah, so... Maybe
like maybe in the
jam.
Ads in there too.
Yeah. the hostess ads are all lesbian.
That's right.
Yeah. There's a bunch of so like Joker number 2 gets a second printing, which we sold out of fairly quickly, but we all love Joker number 2.
It's very good.
The second printing cover features a character who is not actually introduced into the third issue.
She shows up,
but she's finna be big. I think. Can we say who it is? I think we can at this point, right? It's the daughter of Bane. Vengeance.
I've got such a big crush on her.
Lady Vengeance?
I don't know.
All right. It's just Vengeance.
It might be. I don't know.
You've got a big crush on her?
I've got a big crush on her.
She seems mighty.
Yep.
Yeah, I think that she's got big, strong arms.
She
and
seems
she
like
she'd
grab you and
hug.
She'd be like, you're not going anywhere.
Dave, don't you think
I'd be fine with that.
She'd be a dreadnought.
100%.
Yeah, 100%.
The dreadnoughts would welcome that.
I am now extremely invested in G.I. Joe. When do we start?
Yep. Nightwing, third issue of Tom Taylor's run, continues to be great.
Honestly,
amazing art by Brenda Redondo.
Honestly, I think that this issue is like one of my favorite issues of comics that I've read like in the entire time I've been here.
It's so good. Also,
it is so good.
It has a guest starring Tim Drake.
It is, and it's delightful.
And Tim goes undercover with the dog.
That is also true and also delightful.
Notice that in Dick Grayson's narration, when Tim is coming, he's like, some people think he's the best Robin. And because he does not himself have a big ego, and he's like,
and
I
that's
see it. He's like, they might be right.
Yeah.
Pretty
like
cool.
That.
That's the kind of guy Dick is.
I really love the way that, like, Tom Taylor sort of does, like, this good relationship stuff, like, between characters, while also having it be funny and compelling. Like, there's the bit where, effectively, like, they're being interviewed.
Yeah, there's a police interview
going on
with them.
Yeah.
And they ask...
He's
What's
like, so what exactly
is
the nature of your relationship? And Dick's like, well, I was wondering that, but I thought that a police interview might be a real bad time to tackle it.
There's also a great bit there where she says, they say something, they're like trying to intimidate him, and Barbara's like, well, I'm a lawyer. And Dick's like, oh yeah, I am too.
Yeah, I'm also a lawyer.
Yeah.
Some fun stuff. The Many Deaths of Layla Starr, the Boom book, gets its second issue, which Anna, you and I both really dug.
Yeah, I mean, I think
I did
it's...
too.
Oh,
it's like
Dave
funny.
Liked it too.
I was the one who told y'all to read it.
Oh. Did you?
I think so.
Oh, okay.
It's possible.
Well, yeah.
That's fair.
Really it was good. Because I made this. Yeah. I think I made the sign for it and intrigued myself about it.
Yeah.
But yes, this is the one where the embodiment of death has to go and live as immortal.
Yeah.
As a mortal, not immortal. Because someone is going to, like, sort of invent immortality.
They're going to cure. Like mortality,
and she's out of a job.
Her
and
department
so,
has been downsized.
So she's like, well, I'm going to go murder this baby so that I can.
Yes. Believe it or not, it's a lot funnier than
it is.
It is darkly comedic, and it has this kind of like. There's like the sort of a bureaucracy of the afterlife and all that stuff.
It feels Gaiman-esque to me.
It absolutely does.
It kind of does.
Although there is like a particularly Eastern bent to
it. It is. It's like, I think she's supposed to be
like
Shiva.
Like Hindu style. Yeah.
She's supposed to be Shiva and like her boss is Agni. So, I mean, also like, the book just has like a really simultaneously approachable but also lofty way of talking about things like as far as death is concerned and like the interaction between like I guess like the types of bonds people form
for sure
and how those bonds may be severed by death and it's particularly fascinating and if you want to laugh a little bit but also want to feel something it's pretty good.
It was good. Also, Radiant Black number 4 comes out this week. That's Image's book. And they're reprinted all three issues, so we've got the first three issues, which have really nice new covers. And issue four has a big twist that I did not see coming. So I was very happy with, and I'm digging this book, which is sort of their... It's another Image, sort of independent superhero book, but it's heavily influenced, like Power Rangers. But I have no Power Rangers love, but I'm actually really enjoying this book.
Interesting. Well, I remember the Power Rangers thing, and I was not 100% sure if that was like a reasonable descriptor. Does that still...
It's not very Power Rangers to me. It's more Invincible without the bloodshed.
Is there a team?
Nope.
I mean, there's some bloodshed.
There's some bloodshed. Image also has the return of Stillwater for the second arc. That's Chip Zdarsky and Ramon Perez's book about the town where nobody dies. Another chapter of The War of the Bounty Hunters Prelude for Star Wars. And another issue of Daredevil, which is one of my favorite books.
Yeah.
Was there anything else notable on the list?
I'm just going to mention on the weird indie front, if you didn't mention this.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about this one.
Ed Piskor. I don't know how you say it. Ed Piskor, who did the Hip Hop History?
Yeah.
Is that Hip Hop Family Tree?
Hip Hop Family Tree. And then they pulled him to do the X-Men variant on it and Fantastic Four.
Yeah. No, that was Tom Scioli.
That's right. He did the X-Men history, too, in his kind of underground style. He's got a crazy underground comic called Red Room, so people who kind of like his stuff and might want to see him cut loose on a non-historical sort of thing, this one's a weird one, and I'm just going to say it's a weird comic, and...
It's very strange.
Yes, so something to consider. I think that's it for me.
Okay.
Yeah.
There is the video game comic also coming out this week, the Far Cry.
Yeah, I don't know if folks like me play the Far Cry games, but coming up in... It got pushed back to September. Maybe it's coming out earlier since they're doing this prequel comic.
But it may be doing the comic and then the graphic novel, so it'll be out in time for the...
That might be. But the basic gist of it is that it's going to be set in a very, like... like a Cuba-like land that is meant to be under the tyranny of a dictator, and in the game you're going to play his son trying to lead the people to revolt against him, ultimately.
Mm-hmm.
And Giancarlo Esposito is doing all the motion capture and design work for the dictator.
Yeah,
and you can watch this 5-minute like CG opening cutscene where it's him talking to his son when he's like 11, and it's a really great creepy sequence. While there's like protests going on down below, and he holds like puts a live grenade in his son's hand, and he's like, tells him this metaphor, how the grenade is a metaphor for power, but how you have to hold on to it or it can explode.
Mm.
And then he like takes it to the edge, and he's like, so his son can release the grenade into the crowd.
Ah,
oh my god. Below.
It's very intense. So I love the Far Cry games are mostly first person action shooters, but they always have this notion of like, usually you're trying to like kind of do area recaptures and set up bases and stuff like that. And I haven't read this yet, but I assume this is a prequel that's going to show some more of that scary behind the scenes family Game of Thrones politics in like a Cuba like country.
Yeah.
So it should be fun. The art looked good, and I'm interested enough in the game.
All right. Well, that's comics for the week. We're going to take a quick break and then talk about a podcast, a TV show, and a movie. You don't know this, but we just talked about G.I. Joe for another 10 minutes.
Oh my god, they did. Please send help.
So we brought Nick in, and Dave and I had talked to us about the G.I. Joe that we read, which is the first like 50 issues. Nick came on for the later issues, and he talked about Battle Force 2000 and the Saw Viper that murdered a bunch of Joes. And, I don't know what else happened. The Eco-Force? We didn't get Eco-Force.
There's Eco-Force. There's Darklon and the Iron Grenadiers.
Darklon and the Iron Grenadiers. Yep, there's all kinds of stuff. Yeah. Yeah, Anna, you have no idea what you're in for.
I have no idea what I'm in for.
Yep.
Like, let's talk the different iterations of the Hiss Tank. There were like three of them.
You're saying words, and I recognize that there are words coming out of your mouths, but I don't understand like 70%
of them. Refrigerator Perry as a G.I. Joe member.
I forgot about that. William Refrigerator Perry from the Chicago Bears.
The Chicago Bears?
Does
what?
G.I. Joe, yes.
Also Sergeant Slaughter.
Sergeant Slaughter the Wrestler becomes a G.I. Joe. He is their drill sergeant. Also, Rocky Balboa was supposed to be their trainer, but the license fell through.
But they did call him, or they called the villain Big Boa.
Yeah,
which is kind of...
Yeah, they do,
he was the boxer guy.
He was the boxer. And don't they have a Crocmaster at some point?
Oh, yes. Crocmaster is amazing. He runs around with a pack of alligators.
Cobra got a little weird by the end. They started getting into...
That was pretty early.
Yeah.
Crocmaster was in there.
They also had Raptor. Wasn't that there? Didn't they have a Falconer?
Yeah, there was Raptor. He was a little strange.
Somebody high up at Cobra got obsessed with, like, weird... Because they got the hypnotism and falconry and crocodiles.
Well, the Dragonauts also had Naugahyde, and he actually had, like, a wild boar.
That's fair. I do not remember that one.
I do want to say that it's probably a testament to the utter depths of my confusion that I have not made a snarky comment about any of this show.
No, you're just standing there shell-shocked.
I am. Like, my mouth is wide open.
Would
and
you
I
like
just,
to know the wonders of Road Pig?
Look, I mean, I heard about him, and I love that guy already. But, like, I'm just looking between Randy and Nick, like what is happening? What have I done?
What's amazing is we could be making any of this up.
But, I wouldn't know.
But we're not.
You might as well be making it up.
No, all of this is true. None of this is made up.
And Serpentor. Oh, did we get to Serpentor?
We're not getting to Serpentor, who was created by cloning some of the...
Genghis Khan.
They put the DNA of Genghis Khan and Alexander the Great into a tank, and along with Snake out of his body. Yeah.
It was created by Dr. Mindbender.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, we didn't get Dr. Mindbender.
The shirtless tech guy for...
No, I did talk about Dr. Mindbender. I didn't even name him. I did talk about their hypnotist who goes bare-chested but wears a cape.
And there's also the wonders of Cobra Law.
And Cobra Law.
Is that like... Is Cobra Law like their bar exam?
No. That would have to be the Crimson Guard.
Yeah,
they're business tax people.
Oh my
but
god.
But they're also elite assassins.
Yeah.
Yeah, like tax people are.
It was the Reagan 80s, it all made sense.
Okay.
Anyway.
Oh my god.
We are going to start a new podcast.
This has been a very special G.I. Joe episode.
So, for those of you tuned in not wanting to hear about G.I. Joe, that's the third G.I. Joe break we've had in this podcast. So if you congratulations for you enjoyed your bonus G.I. Joe.
There you go.
All right. G.I. So let's talk about the actual topics that we have.
Okay.
I started listening. We had a news story last week or the week before about Jeff Goldblum joining a D&D podcast.
Oh yeah, I remember that.
Dark Dice. And he's gonna be in season 2. And it said that season 1 was already up, and it said something about like that they did music and they edited it and that kind of thing. So I'm like, oh, I'll give this a listen. I'm not a big fan of, like, Adventure Zone or Critical Role. I don't get into the actual plays as much. I've tried. It's not my thing.
Yeah.
This one is interesting, though, because it is sort of horror-tinged. There are 6 players. I believe there are various, like, they're doing accents, and at first I thought it was like, oh, cheesy accents. No, it's actually, like, it's a Scottish woman. It is a man. I don't know where his accent is from, but it's definitely a different accent. And they're like, it's like a European thing.
Okay.
Interesting.
And their DM sort of like re-record stuff outside later to describe what happens, and he gets sort of very florid. And so it's more like listening to an audiobook.
Oh, okay.
Oh, that's
cool. They edit it down, they cut out a lot of the table chatter, and basically it becomes like a story. And they also have like full-on music and sound effects and all this kind of stuff. And it is the story of this village where... the children have gone missing, and these adventurers set out to find the children, and they go off and find there's some undead. They run into a group of merchants that turn out to have intellect devourers that have eaten their brains. And he does this sort of this weird fantasy thing where I'm like, I don't know what he's talking about, but he does this sort of this creepy thing. And they come back the next week, and they say the intellect devourers. I'm like, oh, that's what that was. I wasn't even putting it together because he was describing it all in sort of this horrific terms.
Yeah.
Anyway. Much as when you listen like Matt Mercer to do the DMing thing, and you get this guy's a really good DM, and he really gives you paints a picture. This DM's really good. Their storytelling is really good. Their characters are really interesting. One of their guys is Ayas Innskeep, and he is basically an innkeeper whose son got kidnapped, so that's why he's on this mission. And he is basically always down talking to the gods. He doesn't believe in religion, even though there's a paladin and a cleric with him, and he sort of gets in fights with them about it.
Yeah,
it's really cool. At one point, their dwarven cleric steps in a bear trap and gets his leg crushed, and they describe it in sort of vivid detail, and you're like, oh, it sounds really bad.
Yeah.
It's a really good... I'm about 4 episodes in. They do interludes where each person introduces their character and gives them their backstory and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's like 12 episodes the first season.
That's cool.
I recommend it if you're looking for a sort of D&D storytelling. It is sort of a darker adult podcast. But I dug it. It's been really fun.
I wonder how Jeff Goldblum got interested in this and has attached himself to it.
I don't know.
Yeah,
because that
so
seems
weird.
Like a huge get.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah, this is not like it's a podcast network and everything, but this is like 7 people running this.
Yeah.
It is not like a big
If you told me that Jeff Goldblum was going to play a character on, like, Critical Role, I've been like, that makes perfect sense.
Or Adventure Zone, or one of the big ones I've heard of.
But, but a small pod, or I say small,
I
relatively
think it's
cause,
small, yeah.
Relatively because I don't know, but that's pretty interesting.
Yeah. But anyway, I highly recommend it. I think people would like it.
Cool.
Nick, you and I watched on HBO Max Those Who Wish Me Dead.
Yes.
So this was this was going to be a theatrical release, wasn't it? Or was it a theatrical release?
I believe it was. I think it was one of the HBO Max's day and date.
Yeah, okay.
If I'm not mistaken.
So this is a hard one. It's by the writer of Hell or High Water and Sicario.
Yep.
He's a writer I think a lot of people really like. And it stars Angelina Jolie and John Bernthal.
And oh, I love Nicholas Holt.
Nicholas Holt.
Also
and,
love him.
And
Aidan Gillen.
Okay.
Who you might know as Littlefinger.
Yes, from Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
So basically, without getting too far into it, Angelina Jolie is a smoke jumper, one of the people who jumps into fires with other firefighters. She had a traumatic experience where basically they survived, but like they watched some kids burn.
Oh,
and
God.
She keeps having like flashbacks of this thing.
Yeah.
And so she is now, she's also a bit of a daredevil. Like she's basically kind of, she's not drinking herself to death, but she's kind of like,
she's got
acting
a bit,
out.
Yeah, she's got a little bit of, not a death wish, but basically just like, I'm so far down the rabbit hole, I need to like do things that are outside trying to break out of that funk.
Like early on, she jumps off a 4x4 with a parachute. And
going like 60 miles
going, like,
an 60 hour.
Miles, yeah. So she's like, she's like getting herself into danger.
Oh my God.
So she winds up getting assigned to like the fire watch and like the tower.
In one of the towers, yeah.
Which is like the not glamorous thing and not what she wants, but she's sort of sidelined. Her ex-boyfriend, who is a sheriff, somehow has something to do with the assignments. That's John Bernthal.
Yeah. I thought he was just the town. Basically, what else is. She just got assigned to that. I didn't think
I thought, well, he's at the training, and doesn't he basically. Oh, no, he arrests her.
Yes, he arrests
but
her.
But I think that's what leads him down to the. She was arrested.
Yeah, because John Bernthal and his current wife run like a survival school.
Yeah, survival school, yeah.
Which is really cool, actually.
There is a. This is all sort of set up early on. And what happens is that there is a guy and his son, who's maybe, what, 10, 12?
Yeah, somewhere in that.
This guy is a forensic accountant, and he found something he wasn't supposed to that implicates, like, politicians and stuff. And now there are these two, like, military assassins after him. And that is played by Nicholas Holt and Aidan Gillen, and they are creepy and scary and efficient.
Yeah, they're very efficient.
Oh, I love
efficient.
That.
And,
I love the idea of those
and
two guys.
Basically, the kid winds up running in with Angelina Jolie's character, and the two of them are on the run while Bernthal is trying to find him, and these two assassins are, like, all circling. It's a lot of, like...
That sounds really complicated.
I mean, Hell or High Water has a little bit of that, too, and they, like, it's bank robbers, and they step in. They do a good job of establishing all this.
They do.
And then of, like, setting up, ratcheting up the tension, it's a very realistic action movie.
Yeah.
It's not like action movie, it's more
it's like
crime thriller.
Yeah, crime thriller with a little bit of suspense, but...
It's really good. Angelina Jolie is really good in it.
Yeah, she really is.
The Holt and Gillen are fantastic as the bad guys.
I guess I heard in an interview that Angelina Jolie decided to do this to show that her kids, that she's still a badass.
Yeah, and it worked.
Yeah, it worked. She is.
But
she also brings in some really good acting chops, too.
I mean,
you believe her character.
Yeah.
And I really like John Bernthal.
Yeah,
he's
good.
Great.
I don't think I've ever watched a movie that he was in that I didn't like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely worth a watch. It's subdued in some ways.
Yeah,
it's like Hell or High Water. It is more, it's a realistic kind of thing, and it's occasionally a little harrowing. Like the stuff that happens, I'm like, oh, are they going to kill this kid? Like it definitely feels like he's in danger the whole time.
Yeah,
yeah, I think I like Hell or High Water a little bit more.
Me too. I would definitely put Hell or High Water higher.
But
what was this called again?
This is called Those Who Wish Me Dead. It is not a boom comic.
It is not a boom comic.
But it does sound like a title.
But it does.
Yes.
No, that sounds really cool, and where can I watch this?
It's on HBO Max.
Yeah. HBO Max. Okay, I'm going to watch this.
HBO Max also has their new original, Hex.
Yep.
That's Hex.
Yes.
I don't know why my voice got all high. and this is Jean Smart.
Yes.
Always great. Playing a sort of a Joan Rivers type, like...
Basically,
elderly
a comedian that headlines a bunch of stuff in Las Vegas.
Yeah, she lives in like a penthouse apartment. She's rich, well known. She does like shows on the QVC network.
Yep.
She is like she's basically at the peak of her the peak of her career, but also retirement age.
Correct.
And She is basically the casino owner wants to slow down the amount of shows she's getting to bring in Pentatonics, which she wants nothing to do with. She does not want to stop work.
I forget that actor's name who plays the casino owner. I only know him because he was in Happy Gilmore.
Oh,
Gilmore,
yeah.
As Shooter McGavin.
Okay.
And he's just fantastic in this as kind of the sleazy over the hill kind of casino owner. I just love him.
And so while she's living the sort of high life, she's rich, she can do whatever she wants.
Yes.
And she is indulging all her old grudges. There's this new female comedian coming up who basically tweeted something indelicate about a... Was it about a politician's kid or something? Oh, no. It was a politician, his gay kid.
Yes.
That she was like, he's a conservative politician. She made a joke at the expense of the gay kid and got herself canceled.
Yep.
And now her desperation, she is basically being brought in by her agent to write jokes for this woman who does not want her to write jokes for her.
Well, I mean, he basically sent her there without basically telling them at the very last second that, you know, oh, she's going to come here and she needs this.
So there's some, they're basically, they both kind of need each other, but neither of them want this job. And it's kind of fun. It's weirdly, totally it's weird. It's like, it's somewhat dramatic and also comedic.
Yeah. I think I liked it for its tone.
Yeah.
I think it kind of surprised me. And I just love Jean Smart.
Jean Smart's great.
She is having, like, this new heyday of just being a badass actress.
She was great in Legion.
Legion. Watchmen.
Yeah, right.
She's in Mare of Easttown right now, and she's doing a phenomenal job in that. Talk about dark, though.
Yeah.
And then this one, and I'm just like, does HBO really just love writing her a check? Because it certainly seems that way.
Yeah. And also, I mean, they do a good job with the splendor and the sort of also creepiness of Las Vegas.
Yes.
The bit where the young comedian goes down and sort of winds up, when she's supposed to be writing, and winds up playing pachinko or whatever all day with the lady at the, at the slot machines, I guess. Gets into sort of the sleaziness of Las Vegas.
Huh.
Yep, and also, buying pepper shakers for lots of money.
The thing with the antique dealer was kind of funny.
Yeah, it was. This is a HBO Max exclusive. They're not actually airing it on HBO, right?
Right, it's the HBO Max series.
Yeah, I'm enjoying this. I look forward to seeing more of it, yeah.
Nick, you're going to mention Cruel Summer?
Yeah, it's a new show on Freeform. I think there's been 6 episodes.
Is it on Hulu as well?
Yes, it's on Hulu as well. It's basically it's got a weird premise in the sense that it takes place over 3 years... And it jump cuts between the years.
So it should be called Cruel Summers.
Pretty much. It takes place in 93, 94, and 95, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay.
And it starts out with a young girl. It's always on her birthday.
Mm-hmm.
And a young girl sort of wanting to kind of be a person that she's not. She wants, you know, to live in the limelight of high school, be like the popular one.
Mm-hmm.
But she's not. And... then the second year, the woman that she sort of idolizes gets kidnapped.
Okay.
And she sort of supplants herself into that same person, like friend group, and becomes the one with the hot boyfriend and
she's
everything.
She's a single white female, sir.
Yes. And then in the third year, that woman, the person who was kidnapped, is found. And it comes to light that maybe this girl that took her place saw her at some point during her imprisonment and didn't say anything.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, God. It's dark as hell. But it's interesting, and the performances are really good. I didn't recognize anyone other than a few, like, parents and people that have played bit roles.
Hmm.
But I was kind of surprised by it. The jump cuts are hard to wrap my head around in that first episode, but once you get used to it, it's got a really good pace, and the characters are pretty believable. And it takes place in Texas, so there's got the sort of Texas twang to it.
All right, fair enough.
Yeah, kind of like Dallas elitism. I'm enjoying it. I'll be curious to see where it goes.
And Anna, you were going to talk about Tighten Up the Defense.
Yeah, so, because DC and Marvel do such a bad job of keeping a lot of those older comics, like, in a readable print format.
Right.
I've been scouring the podcastiverse for sort of like information about certain properties I like, and so I came across Tighten Up the Defense after watching so many hours of Jay and Miles.
Mm-hmm.
And the rough pitch for Tighten Up the Defense is guy who owns all of the Teen Titans issues from their first appearance onward reads an issue, gives a brief synopsis of how batshit crazy Teen Titans was in the 60s.
Haney stuff?
Yeah, and it is, like, nuts.
He was basically, like, inventing teen slang, too.
Yeah, like, well, and it's super funny because they have a very adorable little section, like, maybe on, like, their fifth episode where he's like, yeah, so normally, like, people come and they leave us comments about the podcast, but this comment was left by my mom, who came to tell me that, A, sweetie, you're doing a great job, and B, also, that, like, the slang that we were making fun of was the kind of shit that she did say when she was a teenager. But the latter half of the podcast, he invites his brother to come, they get shit-faced drunk, and talk about the things that they love about the book. So it is a delightful format to learn about the Teen Titans.
Yeah.
Very charming, very funny, and just a great dry sense of humor, sort of, as they approach, like, a lot of what would have been the very dated bits of these comics without, like, making fun of the comics themselves.
Right.
So, like, an earnest appreciation for, but not letting them get away with bullshit.
This feels like of a piece with the Jay and Miles Explain the X-Men that you love.
Yeah, it is. Very similar.
Okay.
Right. Add or take a bunch of alcohol. But, yeah.
So, yeah, you can listen to that alongside our soon-to-launch Anna listens to Randy, Nick, and Dave explain the G.I. Joe.
Yeah, Anna boggles at G.I. Joe.
We'll have to find a name for the G.I. Joe cast, but I think this is probably going to have to happen.
Oh my! I was joking, but now I'm like really invested
totally
in
this.
It.
Yeah.
I do think it would be super fun.
Yeah. All right. Well, that'll do it for us this week. We'll be back with more next week. And until that time,
Yo Joe. Joe.
See, that's a thing that he used to
no,
say.
No, Joe.
Roguecast is a weekly podcast broadcast from Rogues Gallery Comics and Games in Round Rock, Texas. You can find us online on Facebook and at www.roguesgallerytx.com and email us comments or questions at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.